Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 140, Chris Farley Show.
Talking with Pat Finn, the crafty, wily veteran of Second City and Improv Olympic in Chicago in the mid-90s. But I had no idea until I read this book, this really great book, The Chris Farley Show, written by his brother Tom Farley and Tanner Colby. I really had no idea what a good friend you were of Chris Farley.
Yeah.
You went to college together?
We did. Chris and I went to Marquette together, and that's kind of where we met. And literally, it was I was a freshman and he was a sophomore. And I remember... like he did something. Like the first time we kind of met, it was almost like two dogs sniffing each other. It was my little group of the new freshmen that didn't know what we were doing, and his group. And I did something and got a big laugh. And then Chris, almost like the Sharks and the Jets, kind of looked over and kind of was like, "What's going on over there?" And then he in turn did something enormously huge, and got a big laugh. And then it was just kind of this like, almost now there's two sheriffs going on in this weird way. And I'll never forget, like a week later. I did a bit, and...
Hard to believe.
Yeah, it was actually, ironically, to his girlfriend, Murnie, who I'd known, Katie Murnane, who's wonderful, from back in Chicago, and she was walking towards me with three or four of her friends on the street, and I was happened to be walking towards her on the city street, and as we almost got to each other, I completely blocked the sidewalk to do push-ups. And it was just a gag that, these freshmen I was with, it's hilarious, funniest thing in the world. And I'm like, it was a great thing in high school when I did it, but now this is all fresh territory. And it's funny, Murnie goes, it's really funny when Chris Farley does it. And I'm like, oh, he's stolen a bit from me. And I remember like seeing him in the bar, like, you took my push-up bit. I didn't take anything. And I'm like, of course you didn't. How would you know my bit? You've never met me really to this day. And he goes, you did the push-up bit too? And I go, yeah. And he goes, I added a turnaround into sit-ups. And I'm like, I've never thought of that. And then so all of a sudden we were both kind of like mind.
Well, you're real comedy scientists, comedy nerds.
Yes, exactly. No, but Chris and I became just the thickest thieves you could imagine, just sitting around listening to Cosby and Newhart and National Lampoon albums. A buddy of ours, Jim Murphy, was the same way. He writes for Pixar now. But the three of us were kind of like, it's almost like we had something, I don't want to say wrong with us because it was right with us, but nobody else was... Wait, you're going to sit around and listen to National Lampoon albums? Yeah. I mean, we're going to be drinking. It's not like we're not, having fun.
But, and you were doing this in college.
Yeah.
Not because I remember listening to all that stuff in middle school.
Sure.
Or junior high when people really didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Right. Yeah, no, but it was, I think because we'd done it in high school and in grammar school, that we did it together was even greater to sit around and hang out and check them out.
And were you already, was this just... what am I saying? Extracurricular? Or were you guys into, like, improv teams or into the theater department at Marquette?
You know what? As weird as it sounds, it was so vacant of any... It was void of... And teachers didn't know what improv was. Nobody knew what it was other than Chicago. You didn't know what you were doing.
Because this is like the 1700s. This was all happening,
this
right?
This was happening. I remember we were sitting around flagons of mead, all of us, really, about to board a Viking ship, go to Constantinople, and... Or is it Istanbul? Which one was first?
I'll go back and listen to the They Might Be Giants song and we'll find
it. Perfect. But anyways, so, Chris and I, we kind of knew what we wanted to do. He more than I was like, we've got to do this. This is what we're supposed to do. But we didn't know how to literally go about a thing. We had no idea what to do. And there was a professor named Dr. Jones. And we said, Dr. Jones, we want to do improv comedy. He's like, all right, I'll read up on it and I'll have a private meeting with you two. Great. We were on fire. Finally, we're going to get our break, and then we'll be on Saturday Night Live. And because we thought that's how it happened.
Yeah.
Maybe a day of, some random professor. But anyway, so we went on like a Tuesday night, 7:30. Like, you guys going out to the bars? We're like, no, we're going to a late night class, professor session. We're so excited about it. And we get there. There's a note on the chalkboard. It just says, Chris and Pat, family emergency, can't make it. Start improvising, just the two of you. And it's kind of like saying, both learn how to, make a bomb.
Right.
We're like, all right. We kind of stared at each other like, And then just left and went to a bar because it was like, we didn't know what to do.
Right.
One of my favorite stories is Chris goes, we should write. I was like, you're right, we should. I write comedy. Yes, of course, it makes sense. So it was like a Thursday night. Everyone was going out. I went over to Chris's house, get to his room, up in his house, and I sat in the bed. He goes, I got some paper. I showed up without paper. And it's like, we're just going to write, but why do we need paper? But the two of us just started sitting down. We're like, comedy bits or jokes. And we just both stared at a blank page for like 10 minutes. And we're just kind of like, airplanes are pretty funny. Like, yeah. This is tougher than I thought. And I said, yeah, I had no idea writing was so difficult. And we just thought, literally, you sat down and were like, there.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, how do you think Cosby and Newhart did it? They probably just sat there and made shit up, you know?
Right, exactly. There's Animal House.
Right. Boom.
And, again, like most college students, well, at least for us, Chris goes, you want something to drink or something? I said, yeah, sure. And he goes, yeah, it might be better, you know, loosen us. Yeah, it'd be great. And he opens his first drawer and pulls out two glasses and closes it and opens another drawer and pulls out a bottle of grapefruit juice, closes it, goes another drawer, and there's two bottles of vodka. And he puts the vodka on top of the desktop. And I'm kind of just watching this presentation. He opens up the bottom left-hand drawer of a wooden desk, antique, beautiful old wooden desk, and it's to the brim with ice. No, like, housing, no...
No plastic, you know, no foil.
Exactly, right, some kind of protectant, you know. And it was just dripping underneath, and I saw, and he just goes, gush, gush, with two glasses, and then just pours these two drinks, and he goes, they're called Greyhounds, they're awesome. I was like, all right, okay, let's get it going. And I think other than Airplane, that's kind of all we had on the sheet that night. But the one thing we had was a like-minded that want to do it.
Right.
And Chris really got me to get into it because he had a passion, man. He had a drive unlike I've ever seen anybody have.
But somehow you went from there to Second City. And if I'm remembering it right, Chris got there first and then brought you in? Were inspired?
Again, Chris went to the Arc Theater. He was a year ahead of me, went to the Arc Theater in Madison. And then a year, when I graduated, the two of us went down together. That was kind of the plan. Went down to Chicago, and literally stood in, I don't know if I've told you this, stood in front of Second City, the theater, 1616 Wells, on a Friday at, 3 in the afternoon, in honest-to-God hopes, that if we paced back and forth, somehow up in the second or third floor, some powers that be would just be like, look, I don't know, we're going to get two funny people on that shorter note. Hold on a second. Those guys look hilarious. Bring them up. I mean, honestly, we just kind of pace like picketers without signs, kind of going, oh, something will happen. This is just, yeah, this is where we're supposed to be.
So at least you had a plan.
Absolutely. Obviously, it's clear that we're very thought-provoking blokes. So
I'm learning more and more about the Marquette education, which I'm very impressed by.
I'm sure all the Marquette professors right now are going, don't say another word. Although, quick side note, but the two of us at Marquette, I loved it, met my wife, I loved the school, I have nothing but great, wonderful memories, and think it's one of the best institutions you can go to, but the two of us took philosophy of humor, which is wild, of which I think Chris got a D and I got a C minus, which was like, wow, and Chris was like, I got a D in philosophy of humor, we watched cartoons, it was crazy.
Well, you're good at the practicality of humor, not so much maybe the philosophy.
Exactly, yes, that could be. But anyway, so we had walked back and forth, and a friend of ours, Joel Murray, is a friend of mine, Joel Murray's mom and my mom went to church every day together, we're from the same parish in Chicago. And Joel's brothers are Brian Doyle and Billy and John Murray, and obviously there's nine of them. But, you knew of the Murrays. And we had brothers and sisters in the same class, and I ran into Joel. And I was like, hey, Joel, Pat Ben, yeah, what's up? My friend Chris, we want to get into comedy. And he just sits there, just kind of stares at both of us, because he was going into the theater, and goes, yeah, okay. Go see Del Close and Sharna Halpern. Take a class at the Improv Olympic and go into Second City and take classes there. All right, I'll see you guys later. Walked away, and it was just like we had been given the keys to the city. Now we've made it. I mean, literally, it's like being told to go to, the minor leagues for the, Major League Baseball But we did. We went to the Improv Olympic and Del Close and Shauna Halpern. And Chris was, you know, made for the stage. So then we did Improv Olympic ate generic mac and cheese for a year and a half or so. Had tryouts for Second City. Chris got in, toured for a few months. Was that good that he got hired by the main stage, which is kind of unheard of.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike Myers, Bonnie Hunt, there's a few people.
Yeah.
But, and I remember people, you know, murmuring, you know, why is he there? He didn't pay his dues. And you're like, God, when you're that good.
Hey, this is Joel Murray, Freddie Rumsen from Mad Men. And I tell you, I could just pee my pants over how great this Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast is. Fabulous. Ooh. Aw, Christ.
Talk a little bit about why Chris was so funny. I mean, he's commonly known, he's a big, dumb, fat guy. But he wasn't a big, dumb, fat guy. He was really smart and really not only good at what he did, but every character he played that character to the best of his absolute ability.
You're well put. I mean, Chris was all in. He was 100%. And he bought into every one of his characters. Also, every one of his characters had passion and had one trait at least that was likable.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was a scene on stage one time I was watching with one of the heads of Second City. And Chris went in to do the set, which is the improv set at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And two people were on stage just doing a relationship scene. And it was great.
Yeah.
And they said, Chris, can you come out and be the waiter? Sure. And Chris went out and wasn't stealing focus by any means. Yeah. But was just, I think he was a waiter that was his first day.
Yeah.
Or his girlfriend just broke up. There was some underlying thing that was so endearing that the guy turned next to me and he goes, watch the audience. He leaves the table to go over to the area where he's going to pour their water.
Right.
The entire audience watched him.
Yeah,
that's all they cared about.
Yeah.
And it wasn't anything like he's going to do something. You just wanted to watch him. He was that engaging as a performer.
Yeah, call it presence, call it commitment. I mean, it's something you look for in every actor.
Sure.
Yeah, that kind of, that's phenomenal. I mean,
yeah, you can't buy it, you can't train it, you can't do anything. You just see somebody that you're, I mean, when you watched him perform, it was rare that you weren't watching, not doing a thing, not saying a line, not doing anything, but you always were aware of where he was on stage.
Well, and I remember, I mean, that sparks the thing that you say there was always something in him that was likable, and I always thought of him as having such a large heart. I mean, to match his large size. But I remember they were talking when The Cable Guy came out, the movie with Jim Carrey and Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
That was originally developed for Chris. I remember reading that at the time, and I saw the movie, and I didn't buy it for a second because Jim Carrey played it in a way that you went, Matthew Broderick would call the cops in 2 seconds if this guy were on it. But if Chris Farley were playing that guy, you would have gone, oh, yeah, he's annoying, but he's kind of lovable. He's like a big puppy.
Yeah. You always wanted to bring Chris home.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of the thing about Chris. He was endearing. He wanted nothing but fun.
Yeah.
I mean, he really did. It was nothing about him that was like, he wasn't like, you know, talked ill of people or was like, this sucks. I mean, of course, he wasn't, you know, perfect, but he was just a likable guy you wanted to be around.
Did you guys lose touch at all when he went on to Saturday Night Live and left Chicago, left Second City?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. One of my favorite characters, Chris, was at Second City, and it was a weatherman. And it was just, everybody's played a weatherman, and here's the weather, and I'm pompous and whatever. Chris's weatherman was... It was one of the coolest scenes. It was almost like you looked at it like, oh, my God. It was a weatherman that felt bad about the weather. So it was something like, all right, so it's a great day today, and tomorrow's Thursday, and then we go in the weekend, and there's a front coming in, and it's, I know people have softball, and so, I'm so sorry. It's gonna happen, but it was just like
the apologetic weatherman.
Exactly, like he felt it was his. I'm sorry, but I'm bringing this front coming in. It was due to my, you know.
Well, and that's part of the whole charm of the sketch that he would do, the recurring sketch he would do on SNL, the Chris Farley Show.
Yes, which was him.
He would interview Paul McCartney and go, "That was awesome," you know, and you'd go, "That's adorable."
Right. Okay. Except when the first time we met Aykroyd, who couldn't have been nicer. It was just like, we both said hi. And here's the thing. pretty much that's every one of us. You see Nicholson on the street, it's like, hey, Jack, you're in The Shining. And then where do you go from there?
Yeah, really.
So where'd you go to grammar school? I mean, there's really no other, you have nothing in common other than I've seen everything you've done.
Yeah.
We saw Aykroyd, and it was like, hey, Dan, hey, guys, how are you? Great. Yeah. You were in Blues Brothers. And it was just like, and you know, Dan could have been nicer. He's like, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was great. He's like, yeah, I saw that. He's like, oh, good. Good. Thank you for going. But
I mean, that's just 100% open, honest, yeah. in the moment.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Not trying to be clever.
No, right. Yeah, not trying to outwit him or like, yeah, I'm one of you. But yeah. So Chris got picked up by SNL, and which was great. And again, going back to this is how. Chris's first night, September 29th, 1990, was actually my and my wife's wedding night. That was our first. That was my first wedding.
And congratulations!
Thank you. In Hollywood, we say first wedding. But that was our wedding day.
Okay.
And I get a phone call from him, like maybe the end of August, winter. I don't.
Sorry.
So I got my first show on your wedding. Oh, you know, maybe I'll talk to Lauren and see if I can leave early, or maybe go to the wedding and leave the wedding. I don't know what to do. I'm like, Chris, man, it's SNL, dude, it's your dream. And but again, here's a guy that has his dream, but was still concerned about, yeah, it's you and Donna. And I mean, yeah, there's no way he could have done it.
No.
Nor would anybody have ever thought to ask him. But right, just in the back of his mind, it wasn't like, hey, by the way, first show, sorry. It's like, yeah, no, it was more like, maybe I could do a remote in, right, Springfield, Illinois. Right.
Yeah.
Sure, Lauren will go for that your first night.
It wasn't, screw you, I'm on Saturday Night Live.
No,
smell you later.
God, yeah, right. No, yeah, it was the opposite.
Yeah, I don't even really want to talk about this too much, but were you aware of the demons that he had, the addictions?
You know what? You know, yeah, no, I guess. Chris was excessive in everything he did, whether it was a friend, whether it was to help somebody, whether it was to go to church, whether it was to do social work, whether it was comedy or characters or making a scene great. It was reckless abandon. He was all in, like I said.
Yeah.
So where we differed was I just was, for some reason, he never brought me into that world, which it was funny. I have a girl going into high school now, and I did a thing for a drug awareness thing for high school kids and middle high kids. And it was wild because I had my kids sit and listen to it, and they would ask me questions, and I was just blunt about it. I said, looking back on it, yeah, you know, you knew Chris was doing, you know, pot or whatever, and then other things. But I didn't know about all the things by any means.
Right.
And in a weird way, when I was talking to my kids, I was like, looking back, Chris never once said, you've got to try this.
Yeah.
Or you really have to do this. You're going to be at my level or this level. Or we can do things together at this level.
Right.
And that's pretty amazing. I mean, that's great. But
it wasn't about, I mean, for him, it wasn't about bringing the party to everybody else. I mean, it was that was clearly something that he.
Yeah.
It was personal for him.
Yeah, definitely. And it was a tough place. You're in New York, you know, from a smaller town outside of Madison, Wisconsin, and you got some cash coming in, and you're by yourself.
Right.
That's where it's tough,
right,
you know, because he's a big family guy and a big friends guy, and he didn't have that either,
right,
there. So a little bit tough for him, I think.
And you mentioned his charity work. He was big into that, which is something, again, I didn't know about till I read this book, The Chris Farley Show.
Yeah. I mean, Chris on two levels. Chris, what's amazing is you could go out to lunch with him, and he would see a kid over the next table, and he would do a bit. He would drop his fork or just fall off his chair or do anything that half the people in the place were like, what's this large man doing? But this 12-year-old kid, to him, it was the funniest thing in the world. He goes, there's some big guy over there just fell off. We did some bit just for him. I mean, I've gone through a toll booth with Chris, and he'll do a bit for the toll guy. He'll be like, you know, I'm on fire or whatever in a car. And the toll booth guy's like, what? And he goes, I'm just kidding. And the guy's like, he's probably had a billion people come through his toll booth. And everyone's been like, you know, eh, whatever, and blown smoke in his face. This guy goes home at night, you know, cutting his meatloaf, going, I had an odd day. This large fella came into my toll booth lane and...
Was he, but, I mean, I didn't know him at all. I think Dee met him a couple of times, and we know his brothers, yeah. You know, John and Kevin. But was he one of those guys where you go, oh, Jesus, Chris, stop being on. He wasn't one of those.
No, because he was a different on. He never tried. He was, anything he did, like I said, Chris would walk into a room and you would notice him. I mean, he was a large presence,
yeah, right.
But he took the room with him, yeah. You know, and he didn't. Chris wasn't there long. If he was at a party, it wasn't like he was there long. Yeah. You remembered he was there, you knew he was there, and you talked about the fact that he was there, but he couldn't stay for... Usually couldn't, unless it was with, you know, myself or Don or Murph or some of the tight people, or his right. brothers, obviously.
Right.
He'd go to a party. He'd be there for 45 minutes. You know, right. He'd do five bits and a cannonball in the pool.
Boom.
And, yeah, and there's nowhere
Get
else...
Get out, everybody!
There's nowhere else to go from there, yeah. So we'd kind of move on to another party or somewhere else. But, yeah, I mean, Chris did... Stuff at St. Malachy's in New York. He would visit the nuns. Again, Chris and I would go to church a lot. He was very...
You're both from big Catholic families.
Yeah. He was very proud about being Catholic and what it meant. And Chris would... We'd go to church all the time. You know, and people, it's funny. They're like, wait a minute. Really? You guys were out to 2 in the morning. You're goofing around. Or did a show. And you're like, yeah, but, you know, mm-hmm. we still have another side. And it was... he was very reverent. Very... you know, cared, would volunteer with the church. St. Malachy's, he'd go visit the kids.
And it wasn't one of those things where he's calling his publicist saying, hey, I'm going over here to do this. You know, right. And people never knew that he had this side to him.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, no, I love kids.
Well, and to a certain degree, you're not carrying on his work. You're doing your own work. I mean, you just got an award, good heavens, from the L.A. Improv Festival for your charity work.
Yeah, that was amazing. James Grace, who runs the theater, oddly enough, came up with Chris and I. We know James since he was 17, and we've hung out, the three of us, for years and years and years. So that's what made it an amazing award to get, because...
And the award is named for Chris.
It's the Chris Farley Award, yeah. And it was... you know, James is running this festival, and I've done a bunch of festivals. You've done festivals, and a lot of them are great, and it's kind of a hootenanny and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But James is like, you know what? I'm going to make this festival great and have it mean something. And if we can give money to somebody, let's do that. Yeah. So they do a lot for Project Angel Food. And James had asked me about things that I've done. And the two things, my work with EMRF, which is epidermolysis, which is a skin disease, a rare skin disease that kids get. And my manager, Andrea Pett Joseph, her son happens to have it. And Andrea is phenomenal, and her husband, Paul, are equally phenomenal, and really have taken the reins and really brought a lot of light to this disease. And it's basically, they call them butterfly children. And it's, you kind of, your skin has layers on it. But on these kids, mostly their hands and feet, it's not there. It's almost like when you wipe out on a bicycle. They have those throughout their body and definitely on their hands and feet. So to shake hands or to walk is incredibly painful. You know, but, I mean, Brandon's been over here swimming and hangs out with my girls, and he's the sweetest, greatest kid in the world. And it's just his crutch right now.
Right.
And so, you know, there's been a lot of attention that's been brought to this foundation, which is great, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Right.
And the other thing is Chris's foundation, which I've done shows for, and I've done a few videos, which has been great. Mrs. Farley, who's wonderful, has asked me to do a couple things like this book, just to kind of show that the videos that I've done, it's called Natural High, and it's about how kids can do things without getting involved with drugs. And it's, you know, it's Tony Hawk, and I did one with Chris and Tom Farley, Chris's brother, who's great. Just about, you know, would Chris be here without drugs? Yeah, I really think he would be. I mean, yeah. There's not a doubt in my mind. And would the world be a better place? Yeah, it would be.
Absolutely.
Be a funnier place. And so if somebody's can make a difference with their talent and can stay out of this arena, that'd be great.
Yeah, I've seen those billboards. It's a great idea for the...
It's cool.
Yeah, get the high from somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know...
So clearly the best thing that you can do for these various charities that you're working for is to become a much bigger star and a regular on a TV show, something like that?
I don't know if I can get bigger, to be honest with you. I'm surprised. I'm just Pat's assistant. You haven't even been talking to Pat this whole time. My name is Malcolm.
I knew Pat would never talk to the RSC podcast. I knew it!
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. I want to thank Pat Finn for sitting down and chatting with me. You can see Pat in the movie I Love You, Beth Cooper, which is in theaters this summer, or on DVD, probably, by the time you hear this. You can also find out more about Pat's charity work at ebkids.org, ebkids.org. And you should pick up a copy of The Chris Farley Show by Tom Farley Jr. and Tanner Colby. It's now out in paperback, and it's both a very funny and no-holds-barred look at a very funny guy. Send us your demons via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Just click on forum. You can also find us at facebook.com, myspace.com/reducedshakespeare. Become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Addicted to Love Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Kate C. Actually, it's not so random. Kate C. became our 1,400th follower on Twitter this week. So what does she win? She wins a random fan shout-out. She tweeted us to say, I love the RSC and I'm completely addicted to the podcast. You can follow her at KSC42. Special thanks to Joel Murray, Second City veteran, and Freddie Rubinson from Mad Men, which begins its third season this Sunday, August 16. I hope Freddie returns. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 140/420 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
And then I just did a movie we just finished. It's right, currently called The Untitled Nancy Myers Project, and it's with Meryl Streep and Alec Baldwin, which is pretty...
Yeah, they're okay.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they weren't. Chris and I didn't have them in our improv group, but, you know, I'm sure they can, you know, whatever. That's fine.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.